B-Pod Studios.
Belger.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Belger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
And the St. Louis Blues, for the first time in 49 years, have done it. You can bring out the Zamboni. The Blues will go to the Stanley Cup Final and face off against the Boston Bruins. A rematch. 49 years in the making comes true in St. Louis tonight.
The rematch thing. We got to take that cut out of circulation. I forgot about that. I get aggravated by that every time I hear it.
Rematch.
Yeah, it's a rematch. It was a rematch. Okay, draft the series. Bruins, Blues. I think the Bruins are the better team. I think they're the better team. I think they're going to win the series. I think they have to win the series. I think they should win the series. I think they will win the series. I think they're the better team. I think they're the better team with better players who are playing better. But how does that work out when you actually sit down and say, now here's both rosters, put them together, draft the series. Who would be the first player off the board? And we're going to include the goalies. So who's the first player off the board if you're drafting the series, Maz?
Tuukka Rask.
Okay, who's the second player off the board?
Patrice Bergeron.
I say Bennington.
Yes, you would take Patrice Bergeron over Bennington?
Yeah, well, I'm assuming that I see. I was assuming I'm sort of picking, if I already have a goalie, why would I take another one? Like, that one's decided already, so I left Bennington out.
Okay, well, you're actually, like, you're building an actual rotisserie team.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, though. That's fine. Like, put Bennington second, and then now he's out of the discussion.
So the two
goalies are out.
Like, that's how I sort of did it.
Okay.
Like, you know.
You're just ranking.
Yeah, I mean, just the first two players off the board are the goalies.
Okay.
Providing they're both good.
Sure.
So next player off the board.
Bergeron.
Me too.
I mean, I just think he's the best two-way forward in the series. And so there are some others that are good, but to me, this gets hard, though. I have to admit, when I started, and some of it is, admittedly, we don't see a ton of the Blues. You see him two games a year. Who the hell knows when the last one was? I don't even remember, and I'm not sure the Blues were the same team then anyway. So it's all irrelevant. So, but I think that Bergeron is the best two-way forward in the series. I'll take Bergeron.
Murray, who do you have in that third spot?
Yeah, I too would go with Bergeron there.
Me too. Jimmy Stewart, are you playing along?
Yes, sir.
Who would you have in that third spot behind the goalies?
Parenko, the defenseman for the Blues.
You'd rather have Parenko than Patrice Bergeron?
Yep, I think he's the great eraser. I think he's their Chara.
Okay. I think he's a tremendous player, and I think there's... Well, I'll get to Parenko, but okay, you have him third. You might sense a trend here with Jimmy Stewart's selections. Who would you have next after Bergeron?
Parenko. I do. I have him fourth. I just think he had a monster series against the Sharks. He's gigantic. He's 6'6", 230. He is sort of close to what Chara was in his prime. And I think this guy's a force. I think he's the best defenseman in the series. And that's why I picked him. Again, I went Bergeron first, best two-way forward. Now to me, okay, who's the best defenseman in the series? I think it's Parenko.
I'll have Bruins bias here. I don't know enough. I've only watched a handful of these Blues games. So I'm actually going to go with Charlie McAvoy.
Okay, so I went Marchand there, but I do have Parenko ahead of McAvoy.
You do?
I think Parenko is the best defenseman in the series. And I don't know about ceiling. I think Charlie McAvoy's ceiling is tremendous. I don't know if, Parenko... And what's his first name? How do you pronounce it?
Colton.
Colton Parenko. I don't know if Colton Parenko can be Drew Doughty. I think McAvoy has a chance. You know, Pareko's more of the eraser, defensive defenseman guy. But in this point in time, I think Parenko was more of a factor for them than McAvoy was for you. I have Parenko ahead of McAvoy. But my fourth pick is Marchand. It's Marchand.
So, no,
Stu,
listen.
Stu, you want to keep playing? Who's your fourth?
Bergeron is my number four.
Okay. Who's next? Who's number five?
Ryan O'Reilly is number five on my board.
This is where I have McAvoy. So I look at McAvoy and I say he's probably the best two-way defenseman in the series. Like, and again, I just think Parayko's a force on that defensive end. If McAvoy plays to his peak, he'll be able to control the game better than any defenseman on the ice. It's an if, but I think he's that kind of player.
And fifth is Marchand for me.
Okay. I have Ryan O'Reilly before the defenseman. So I have Ryan O'Reilly, like, for example, ahead of David Pastrnak. I have him ahead of Tarasenko. I have him ahead of all the defensemen. I think O'Reilly is their version of Bergeron. Yeah, and I don't even know if he's an off-brand knockoff Bergeron. He's 85-90% of Bergeron, does a lot of the same things. And when Bergeron and him went head-to-head in Buffalo, O'Reilly had a lot of those matchups, like got the better of Bergeron in a lot of those matchups. Don't sleep on Ryan O'Reilly. Who's next for you, Maz?
Pietrangelo. And again, I put an emphasis on those St. Louis D because I think that that's the strength of the team. I think that's what their real strength is. So he's the captain of the team. He's got more offense to his game than Parayko does. And I just think that, again, they're going to, if they win, it's going to be because their D controls the series. And those two guys are a big problem. Parayko and Pietrangelo are big problems for the Bruins.
Want to weigh in, Stu?
I have Pietrangelo next as well. I think that defensive pair is the reason why their goaltender is so good this season.
Number six for me is Ryan O'Reilly.
Okay. Then I'll just give my next two. Then I have Parayko, McAvoy. My defensemen are whatever that is, 7-8. And I do have Parayko ahead of McAvoy. Maz?
Marchand. I mean, like, you know, we're all sort of in the same neck of the woods here. But again, to me, Marchand is the best pure offensive player in the series, I think. It's close because I think Tarasenko's pretty good,
too. So you have Marchand ahead of Tarasenko and Pastrnak?
I do.
Yep.
Yeah,
so do I.
I think Marchand is that kind of player. I mean, he is one of the top, I don't know what, 10 forwards in the league maybe? Man, that's too high because if you include centers. How about non-centers? Like, I just think Marchand is dynamite. I have him that high, yes.
Yeah, and then I go Tarasenko. He's as close to, in terms of those forwards, that you'll get as far as a household name on that team.
Okay, so let's just wrap it up here. My last two are Tarasenko, Pastrnak, Pietrangelo in that order. All right, Tarasenko, Pastrnak. I have Tarasenko ahead of Pastrnak. I do. So as I just look at my list, I've got
Pastrnak is my 10th name.
Okay. He's my 9th and Pietrangelo's 10th for me. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Blues. I have 5 Blues and 5 Bruins.
I have 5 and 5.
Stu, what's your list?
I think I'm pretty balanced at 5 and 5 also, but I think I have the Blues ranked higher than I do, more Blues higher than Bruins.
So what I can tell you is that I have 5 and 5, 2 of the first 3 are Bruins, and 3 of the first 5 are Bruins.
I think the talent's pretty even in
this
series.
It is. It's close. And again, it's not, they're not built the same way, because I think the Blues are deeper on the back end. I think you have a little more skill through all of your lines, if that makes sense. And maybe I'm wrong about that, because again, the Blues have gotten production from their other lines. The Bruins have the edge and goal. I mean, on paper, they have the edge and goal. So, like, this is why I say to you, I don't think this is as, I don't think that this thing is a 5 or 6 gamer. It doesn't feel that way to me.
Hockey people, tell me. Those of you who know the Blues better than we do. If you're ranking the defensemen, how do you rank the defensemen here? Is it Parayko, Pietrangelo, McAvoy? And then is it even Bomeister ahead of Carlo? Would you rather have Bomeister or Carlo or Chara? I mean, who or Krug? I mean, you tell me.
Bomeister. Based on, I made a few calls to people like that this morning. And again, they were Boston-related people. So you're going to get a little bit...
Those are job shadows from Rivers?
No, that wasn't them.
I'm just double-checking that.
One of them's a hockey player, though. She knows her stuff.
I asked them, what have you been doing for Maz? And they said, research. We've been looking stuff up and telling them about the teams. I'm like, oh, so when he says I've talked to people, was it the job shadows there? The 17-year-old gals who were just in here?
No. They did do some of my research on game results is what they did. But no, the people here love McAvoy.
Do they have three? But does St. Louis have 3 of the top 4 defensemen in this series?
I mean, I think so. And based on, yes.
How big's Parayko?
Giant
6'6". 6'6", 230. Jesus, okay. He's a monster.
He's huge.
It's like Godzilla back there.
Pietrangelo's like 6'4". I know he was a moose.
They're all big. And then they activate on the fourth, the third pairing there. I forget his name. They have a couple beasts back
Vince
there.
Dunn?
No. Well, he's been hurt. Bortuzzo's big. Maroon, who's checking forward, is giant.
He is. He's 6'3", 220.
They have some big guys.
Huge. They're huge. They're monsters. They're absolutely gigantic, which is why I also worry that the longer this series goes, the more it benefits the Blues. I think this is sort of how they're built. And I think they are bigger and stronger than the Bruins. Now, does that mean they're better? No. It's obviously speed and skill are part of the game, too. So I think I look at it, and I feel like the Bruins are a little more balanced. Like, I think the Bruins have a little more speed to their game than the Blues do. But if this thing is a tractor pull and it's slow and people are getting hit, that favors the Blues.
I mean, even the forwards. You have the better first line. You have the best first line in hockey. But when you really match up the talent, Tarasenko, I think most hockey people would take Tarasenko over Marchand and Pastrnak. I think Tarasenko is considered the bigger overall talent. Now, we watch Marchand every day, and so we appreciate him and say, you would actually have Marchand ahead of Tarasenko, but that's close. Tarasenko is nasty, and I would take Tarasenko over Pastrnak. When I watch Tarasenko, I don't see him turn the puck over nearly like Pastrnak does. I think Pastrnak is still a liability puck management-wise and that sort of thing. I don't think Tarasenko is nearly as bad. Not that he's some great checker. It's just... So anyway, when I'm matching up like the top talent, it's really not that far.
No, it's close.
Schwartz, Tarasenko, who plays on the wing with that? I mean, that's not that far from what your first line is. It's just not. And Ryan O'Reilly is their second line center. They're Bergeron.
Isn't it Shen on that line?
Not exactly sure. Shen is listed at center, so I don't know how they do it.
As the lines are fluid.
All I'm just saying is stack up their top talent against your top talent. It's right there.
Yeah, it's listed as Schwartz, Shen, Tarasenko. Tarasenko on the right wing.
I mean, that's pretty good. It's not quite you, but I don't know. I'd take Bergeron first out of that group, and then Tarasenko, and I'm not even getting to Ryan O'Reilly. So the Blues have it. The Blues have the talent to match you. There's no question about it. And I even think that might extend to the bottom of the roster like the top of the roster.
It's a sneaky team.
And on D, they might have you.
I think they do. I think they have the better D core. Now, again, if you want to talk about speed on D, Bruins. Because Grizzly can skate with the puck. Crew can skate with the puck. We know that McAvoy can. You know, I'm not telling you Carlo's anything special, but he's not a totem pole out there either. Like, you know, he moves a little bit. And so, but the Bruins have more mobile defensemen. I think they do. They got three of them, for crying out loud.
No question.
They absolutely do. What happens when the puck's in the corner? And so, you know, again, and if the puck's in the open ice, edge Bruins. I think this thing's going to be a freaking war.
Okay, there's your Bruins thought. We have a couple Bruins thoughts of the day. That's one of them. You care to weigh in? There's one open line if you want to grab it. It's 617-779-0985. We'll still get to your Patriots stuff as well. Stick around.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Felger here. I know you folks love
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
If I had to give an edge one way or another, I would give it to the sixth defenseman of the St. Louis Blues as being more physical than the sixth defenseman of the Boston Bruins. Now, that's just my opinion. I think it's a different type of physical play. It's a lot of cross-checking. It's boxing out. It's making it difficult to get to the net. The Boston Bruins have shown that they're not going to shy away from anybody, and they can handle any kind of physical play. But I just know from playing against this Blues team, it's not easy ice out there at all.
Yeah, and bigger on the Blues blue line, especially with Dunn not being there. There's a lot of size on the back end. Boston's got a couple of little guys that can maneuver well and aren't afraid to go to right. Those high traffic areas in battle, but not the same size as the Blues.
Patrick Sharp and Keith Jones there, NBC Sports Network, giving the edge to the Blues on D. Certainly in terms of defensemen. I think that's clear. They don't have guys who can scoot like you do and move the puck like you do. But This is also why I like the Bruins, though. I mean, this is sort of conversely, because, and I'm telling you, I think the St. Louis, if I could only pick one D-core, I'd take St. Louis's. I think they have a better D-core than you. But the way they play, I'm okay with. I'm much rather go against the big physical guys that grind it out and play quote-unquote half-court offense and that thing than runners and gunners. Because I think runners and gunners, you have no answer for. I think you can stand up to the physicality, and that's more your kind of game, and I'm comfortable with that. So St. Louis's strengths don't really expose you like a speed team would, and that's part of the reason why I like the Bruins, the style of the fight.
I mean, so look, I don't doubt the Bruins' toughness. I just wonder if St. Louis is too big for them. And so this is where, though, the speed guys and the skill guys come into play. Like, I think this is the kind of series where I think Marchand has to have a good series. You know, a Pasternak to a degree, although he's such a wild card that who the hell knows. But I think that a guy like Marchand could give some of these defensemen fits.
Absolutely.
He could give them fits. And I could see him having a monster series.
I got the Bruins in six. Jimmy Stewart, who do you got?
St. Louis Blues in six.
Okay. I did that on purpose. Stu's got the Blues.
I didn't know this. Did you put this in the email chain this morning? I guess I didn't realize that, Jimmy.
I did not. I was kind of workshopping some things here. I just feel like the Blues' path to get here was stronger than yours. I mean, you swept through Carolina, and meanwhile, the Blues are knocking out the preseason Stanley Cup champion. That I find that notable to me, and that on top of the Blues' defensive core shouldn't be taken lightly.
The preseason Stanley Cup champion being the Sharks or the Knights, or who are you talking
about? The Sharks. Okay. I'm sorry. I went through an NHL.com story, and the Sharks were picked by like 10 of 13 writers to win the Stanley Cup this year.
Okay.
So I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think the Blues' path, I think, has been a bit more difficult than the Bruins.
Are the Blues Winnipeg more battle-tested?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Winnipeg, Dallas, and then San Jose. Yeah.
But that can also be a negative.
They are. They are more battle-tested. But I was saying this here. I just had a weird deja vu. I was saying this somewhere. In the NHL, can you really not be battle-tested by the time you get to the finals? I think I said this yesterday. It's not like football where you can skate all the way to the Super Bowl. You can. Bye week, tomato can, home conference title game. I mean, you could go all the way to the Super Bowl in the NFL and not be battle-tested. In hockey, you go three times seven, three rounds of seven games, it's hard not to be battle-tested.
No, so look, and I think that there's a tendency now to look at Columbus and say that they were a doormat. Columbus was a worthy opponent.
No, and it was a tough series. That made you battle-tested.
I mean, the Bruins were down 2-1 in that series.
Okay, but the Blues did have a harder road.
Yes, they did.
And they're coming off a more competitive series, and that should help them out at least early in the series.
I mean, I think their break, if you want to call it that, was in the middle. Dallas is good.
They went to double overtime in game seven against Dallas.
Did that go seven?
I think it went double. I think that was the double OT game seven. Yeah. So I think Dallas should be a walkover.
Oh, you're right.
But that was the double OT game seven. So that was a grinder for him. Turned into a grinder for him.
Yeah. I just don't know how much talent Dallas really has. How many shots did Dallas have after the first period of that game? Didn't they have something like.
Now, that is an impossible. Why would you possibly think I could have that number?
I wasn't asking. It was a rhetorical question.
I know what
question.
He's talking about.
Murray, how many shots did Dallas have after the first period of game seven in the second round against St. Louis? You have that number?
Single digits.
Yeah, it's like three or something.
Really?
It was something ridiculous.
Oh, something absurd.
Yeah.
So you're saying I should know that number?
Well, I'm telling you, it was absurdly low. Yeah, the Blues completely just shut them down. Absolutely smothered them and stifled them. So, like, you know, as much as they, you know, look, it went seven. So, like, you know, what do you want me to tell you? That could go either way. I just felt like, I don't know, Dallas to me was the worst of the three opponents they played. The Jets are freaking fast and big. Like, that's a good team, the Jets.
St. Louis has had a harder road. That I agree with, and that should help them. To your calls, John in Medford.
I'll give you the exact number on those shots in a minute.
Go ahead, John.
Hey, one name you left off your list here is Jaden Schwartz. He's been a beast this postseason since he got jumbled around in the Game 5 against Winnipeg.
So let me ask you, would you rather have Jaden Schwartz over Pasternak or Marchand?
Which Pasternak?
This one.
The one who can keep the puck on a stick, or the other one?
No, I mean, he's the same guy. Pick one. Schwartz or Pasternak?
This postseason, I'd take Schwartz, but in the bigger picture, I'd take Pasternak or Marchand.
Okay, Schwartz doesn't, you know, Schwartz had 11 goals in the regular season. Over an 82 regular games schedule, he had 11. He's got 12 in the postseason. Something doesn't smell right. I mean, I just don't think he's going to sustain that.
Well, he had
postseason.
Two hat tricks.
Right.
And hey, quick, one more thing on Bouwmeester. He's heavy on the puck, but prone to turnovers. Keep an eye on him.
So people rag on Bouwmeester. People, like,
he's a little older now too, right?
I guess he gets people think he sucks. I don't know. I've liked him when I've seen him. But maybe that's one of the bigger guys that's not a skill that you can take advantage of with the Marchands and Pastrnaks of the world.
I mean, to me, that's going to be sort of the key to the thing. Is some of the smaller skilled forwards skilled players of the Bruins. Johansson's another one. I just worry about Johansson being able to stand up to the physicality.
Well, see, I think Johansson gets their third D pair. I was asked for a series MVP, not a Conn Smythe, but a series MVP, and I picked Johansson because I think he avoids Parayko and Pietrangelo. And
so maybe you're right.
That's that third line. I think that third line is really big for the Bruins, because if I'm St. Louis, I'm matching up those first two pairs on obviously the Krejci line and the Bergeron line. And so Coyle, Johansson, and that group should have the third pair.
I mean, you would think. Again, look, it's logical. I mean, I thought I heard somewhere, too, where the Blues really play five defensemen in that six spot, is sort of a floater. So I don't know. But even so, I just worry about, at the end of the day, can Johansson go seven games without getting hit?
Well, we're about to find out.
I mean, someone's going to hit him, and I don't know if he can stand up to it. And so, again, Marchand, I know, can hack it. Johansson, I worry about.
Sully and Worcester on the Hail Mary thing with the NFL we were talking about. Go ahead.
Hey, Felga, you got it all right. This replay system's going to suck. I think that the whole thing is just an absolute joke. I mean, we're going to start reviewing pass interference. They're going to start reviewing holding an ineligible receiver downfield. It's going to be an absolute disaster. This product's going to be garbage. Thanks for my call,
boys. Okay. So they have one clarification that's going to make sense. They're going to take the PI out of the booth. In the last 2 minutes, that's not going to be the subject to booth review. The coaches are going to have to throw a flag inside of 2 minutes if they want to challenge PI. That's positive. That's less replay, not more. And the way they had it written, and again, they haven't decided to do this yet, but I think they've opened the door for it. The way they had it written was the booth was going to be responsible for offensive pass interference for every pass play inside of 2 minutes, which is all five eligible receivers and the offensive line firing out more than a yard beyond the line of scrimmage. And if Joe Tooney had blocked someone 2 yards downfield instead of one with a minute and a half left, the booth would have had to have stopped the game, watched the film, and throw a flag from the booth and bring it back on the Patriots. Which is just a nightmare scenario. Nightmare. That's got to be a coach's challenge. But the other thing is they want to make it so you can't challenge a Hail Mary. And according to the league, there were 27 Hail Mary passes last year. They are now, and the league is going to have to put into writing the exact definition of one.
I saw this. I went, oh, my God.
And there will be a webinar June 5th and 6th.
I love the webinar.
I'm not making that up. When I saw webinar, I said, okay, here we go. The NFL would hold a webinar with head coaches June 5th and 6th. This is so great. Just like what each coach is doing, because, we all have to do these online human resources things. Like, what are you doing while that person's talking to you? Scratching your nuts. What are these guys doing? Andy Reid has a full three-course meal in front of him. He's eating.
It's so wrong. You can't fast-forward through those videos, too.
He got takeout.
So mad.
Bill, what's Bill doing? He's clipping his toenails. But either way, so there's a webinar June 5th and 6th to review plays that will and won't be overturned for pass interference and to come up with a definition of what a Hail Mary is. That'll be a fun little webinar.
Oh, no. That'll be fun. Bill working Skype would be good.
How do you define Hail Mary?
That's a tough one, man. I saw that and I went, good luck with that one.
Any pass from beyond the 40-yard line? Well,
what if it's a hook and ladder?
Okay, so what if it's a non-Hail Mary but just a desperation play? Okay, fair enough. But even beyond that, take out the hook and ladders. What defines a Hail Mary? Anything thrown from beyond the 50? Well, what if there's one play left and you're on the 35 and you're sort of doing the same thing? You're just chucking in the end zone for three or four guys. So how do you define Hail Mary?
I don't know.
Loft? Hang time?
No, yeah, you're going to have the stat cast out there to figure out what the, where it was projected to land, from what distance, how high off the ground. It's stupid.
Number of receivers in the end zone.
I saw define Hail Mary, I went, oh, my God, here we go. Lawyers.
We all know one when we see one, but then there are tweeners. There are tweeners that it's not a Hail Mary, but it's the same principle. They're just throwing it up for grabs on the last play of the game. So what? Now you're going to try and define this? Oh, wait, that's great. Good. Okay. Just wait for the first thing that doesn't quite hit the definition, but should or kind of is. Now we're going back in for more language. Don't you understand yet that the more language doesn't clarify anything? It just creates more problems. And more replay creates more problems.
Define Hail Mary.
Oh, that's great.
That's a good one.
Let's define Hail Mary.
I looked up the stat. In the second and third periods,
oh, thank you.
They had four shots.
Dallas, I said three. I knew I was close.
Okay, yeah. So that is kind of a number that I kind of, but you do like to do that, by the way.
Well, but it's rhetoric. I'm not asking you.
Yeah, and you like to pretend you don't know Belichick as well as you do.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but that's another thing. But
well, I sort of mean it as like, how many RBIs did he have that year? I don't mean it as.
How do I possibly know that?
Well, I know, but I'm asking it rhetorically. Well, I just mean that he had a lot of RBI that year.
What? How many assists in 2015? Oh, yeah, man, that's 76. How do I know? Like, what do you mean? I have no idea. How many shots did they have in the last two periods of that game?
So in three periods and two overtimes of that game, Dallas had 30 shots.
Okay.
13 of them were in the first period.
Is that Dallas sucking or is that St. Louis's big boys putting a stranglehold on that team? And that's what you need to be worried about.
St. Louis.
So I think it's a little bit of both, which is why I tell you I think that Dallas wasn't a super hard step for them. That's all.
Okay. Here comes Murray's update. We come back with more. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Well, I'd like to think it'll help. Goalie Bob knows him. He was down in Providence, so there's a little extra there. I don't think it'll affect Binnington much. He's playing well. I'm sure he's going to be on his gameplay the way he plays, even though there might be a little more inside information than we would have than maybe a San Jose did, but hopefully we can expose him.
And Cassidy, hopefully we can expose him. This is like a little too much, right? Hopefully we can expose. Yeah, we know him. Hopefully we can expose him. Could be used as bulletin board if you want to, but
he really does. He just does not soften the words. Really,
this whole thing about Binnington being with the Providence Bruins last year fascinates me.
It's different for sure,
and maybe it's starting to bug me a little bit. Okay, first of all, I think it's an advantage for you. He was with Providence last year, loaned last year. If you're just catching up on this story, the Blues had no AHL team last year. It was just so goofy in and of itself. They had no minor league team. They were transitioning their affiliation with one AHL team to the next, and last year they had no team. So they had to disperse their players to other minor league teams. I think they sent most of them to the next rung down, which is the ECHL. Binnington didn't want to go. He said, I'm not going back to Kalamazoo. So they loaned him to the Providence Bruins. Now, I don't think he was in the Bruins training camp last year. I just think he went to the Blues training camp, and then when the AHL season started, showed up in Providence, and he played for the Providence Bruins. So he played in practice with guys like Connor Clifton. For a brief time, Heinen might have gone down there, and Grizzlick went down there. So I think there's only three Bruins that might have practiced with him or rode a bus with him or anything. So it's not like he has intimate knowledge of your shooters from practice. He doesn't. I don't think he ever practiced against Bergeron or Pastrnak or Marchand or McAvoy or these guys. He practiced against Clifton, Grizzlick, and Heinen for a brief period of time. Okay? So I don't think he has much of a book on you. You, though, your coach coached him, and your goalie coach, goalie Bob, who you just heard Bruce Cassidy just mention, goalie Bob Asenza, worked with him. So I think you do have, as Cassidy said, maybe it's a little too revealing, but we might have a little inside information on him. Hopefully we can expose him. Which is just very upfront and very true. We know what his little, you know, does he have a slow blocker? Does he have a problem over his right shoulder? Does he have a problem seven hole? Does he not move laterally from left to right? Is he better right to left than left to right? They have to know those kind of things.
Absolutely they do. And again, or you know, maybe they know a little about his personality. Can he get in his head? Like any of that.
And as I said yesterday, do they know personal things about him? Hey, Hanrahan, I know. There's things of that nature. So I think the advantage there is to the Bruins. I really do.
Hey, Binnington, I heard your mother was in the Army.
Suzanne, was that her name? Suzanne?
I think that's right. I don't remember.
Elaine, you know, we all know.
But I do. I think that, you know, whatever little bit you might be able to glean from that, I think in theory should benefit the Bruins.
Okay. Now, here's what might bug me a little bit is that goalie Bob, I think, is really good. Do you know how good your goaltending has been here in this organization for 2 decades? Do you know that goalie Bob Asenza has been here since 03?
Has it been that long?
I think he finished his career here with the Bruins in sort of that dead period. He was here for a real short stint at the end. And I think he might have gone straight to being the goalie coach. He took over as goalie coach in Boston in 2003. So do you understand who he's coached? Tim Thomas, Tuukka Rask. And, you know, even the last couple of years, their backup play has been excellent.
Yeah, and, you know, they went through a period there where, you know, up until they had 1 year where they had really bad backup play. But other than that, Chad Johnson was good for him 1 year. Okay. Keep going.
Svedberg was decent. But, you know, Khudobin was excellent 2 years ago. Halak was tremendous this year. I think goalie Bob might be pretty good. This organization, again, we've all had our ups and downs with Rask in the big games. Even the biggest Rask hater has to say it. He's a really good goalie. And has been for a long period of time. He is. And that's Thomas, Rask. Goalie Bob knows what the hell he's doing, I think. And Binnington got the benefit of him. Binnington was in the minors and in the blue system for 7 years. And then this year, boom, shot out of a cannon, leads him to the cup. Well, where'd he get? Did you get him there? Is goalie Bob responsible? Is goalie Bob and Jay Leach, and I forget who the coaches are down there, but is whatever the Bruins are whatever the Bruins doing in net, and they must be doing something good in terms of their development and their coaching down there. Are you responsible for Binnington?
It's a good question.
Getting here and now potentially shoving it up your keister, and that sort of bugs me. Now that I think of it, I got an email on this. Phil in Alabama, of all places. He says, I'm not sure what the Bruins email of the day. I'm not sure what the Bruins young goalies look like or if Darth Vlatter or McIntyre have any upside. But were we giving Binnington ice time at Providence last year over those guys? Was that our deal with St. Louis? Because that sounds like the stupidest thing I've ever heard, says Phil in Alabama. Stupid, S-T-O-O-P-I-D, as we say on Felger and Maz. Regardless of what we got in return for that, clearly Binnington got something out of the experience that propelled him to succeed at the NHL level. Experience that our goalies probably missed out on. Am I warranted in my anger with this, says Phil in Alabama? And like I wouldn't go too far with it, but Binnington got 28 starts last year that Vladar or McIntyre or whoever's next did not. I mean, there's a little something to that. I don't know.
Okay, so here's my question. If it got you a piece of information that can help you beat him, is it worth it?
I'll take it, sure.
Okay, so, like, I don't know. It is an interesting thing,
isn't
though.
It?
Look, and I'm willing to bet that part of the reason the Bruins agreed to it is because they're in the other conference. Like, it would never be, you know, it would never be an arrangement that they made with the Buffalo Sabres.
We'll take Carey Price's backup and help him out.
Well, right, exactly.
Are you kidding me?
No way. You would never do that. No, but this is a team on the other side, and the Bruins are probably looking at it. They're like, the only chance we'd ever see them would be the Cup. Like, what's the likelihood of that?
And here you are.
Well, here you go.
Here you go.
Right, here you go. So I don't know. It's a good question. Like, I don't know. I know this. If I were running an organization and a team called up and said, hey, listen, you know, we don't have an AHL. We got to send our goalie somewhere. Do you guys want him? Can we play him there? Sure. Yeah, you can play him here. But we're not. Do you want to coach him or do you want us to coach him? If I were the team sending him, I would say, no, we will teach him.
Me too.
We want him employing our system.
What if you're sending him to a team with a really good goalie coach?
Good question.
And what if Bob Asenza turns out to be really good? I mean, he's just an afterthought. We laugh at goalie Bob because they call him goalie Bob. So cute. We laugh at it. But what if the guy really knows what he's doing?
It's a good question.
And what if he...
It's a good idea.
What if he built this guy into the guy that now is going to beat you for the cup?
Get Dupont on it. Dupont should be out. He's someone that wrote the story in the Globe today, right?
Well, that just occurred to me. That just occurred to me.
I mean, he should. Duke should be asking, who coached this kid down there?
Exactly.
Was it goalie Bob?
All right. But then again, maybe you know his weak points. There's just another Bruins item for you. Your calls. We're going to do a quick Red Sox thing. The game went final today in Toronto. Another win. Another couple good days for Maz's guy, Chavis. Another couple good days for the bullpen. Oh, actually, maybe not on that bullpen thing. Quick Red Sox minute coming up next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sport.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Maz.
Matt Barr.
You again?
Colton Brewer.
Cole.
Ryan Brazier.
Brazier.
And those other guys.
It's back for 2019. An all-new Wheel of Gutless Bums.
Red Sox manager Alex Cora is faced with a tough decision. Who to use in a high-leverage situation late in the game. Now, let's spin the wheel.
Barnes. Brazier.
Brewer.
Thornburg.
Johnson.
Johnson.
Thornburg.
Brewer.
Brazier.
Barnes.
Hembry.
Work. Brazier.
Johnson.
Thornburg.
Velasquez.
Hembry.
Johnson.
And today's Gutless Bum is...
Line round right field. It down. The run scores. Toronto has tied it 4-4 in the ninth.
Nobody on base and two down in the last half of the 12th inning. High fly ball gone to center. Bradley back. Jackie on the wall and it is gone. And he has struck again. And this game is tied again. You've got to be kidding me.
All right, Red Sox go final today. They win. Big. They took 3 of 4 in Toronto, correct?
They did. Didn't feel that way, but they did.
Nope, we're going to rip the bullpen. Go ahead. That was last night. If you stayed up for that one, that was a whopper of a ball game last night. I mean, I'll leave out the fact it's patently ridiculous. You're playing 13, 14 innings in freaking May. But be that as it may, that was a hell of a ball game. Red Sox almost lost it a couple different ways, and they hang on to win. Your guy, Chavis, another game-winning home run. But either way, the Red Sox bullpen, Maz, your thoughts?
Yeah, how many times can you blow it in one game? Was it two or three?
Was it two or three?
It was two, but it felt like more. Because, again, they were up 3-1. Brandon Workman couldn't find the plate. He walked in to run to make it 3-2 and then get out of it.
Did you see the at-bat that he struck out the guy with bases loaded, one out? So the Sox, it was late, Maz. I'm sure you were asleep. Because you go to sleep at like 8:30
sometimes,
but this was late. It was amazing. They brought in Betts as a fifth infielder. So they played with four guys on the right side of the infield, two outfielders and the shortstop there. What's his name?
Galvis
swung at three pitches that were so assy. You can't even believe what he was swinging at. He was swinging at things in the dirt at his shoes. And that's how Workman got out of that inning.
Well, of course, Chuck. No, I saw the Workman inning though.
I think that was, I think I have that right. It was late.
So I'll go back and check. Maybe I missed that. Of course, I was, semi-asleep at that stage. But look, he almost blew the game. Then Barnes, then they got a run because Devers hit another home run. Barnes comes in, gives it right back because he gives up a home run. Then they closed with Walden. They closed with Marcus Walden last night. So what happened to this grand plan that, like, everything was going to work in the late innings? Now Marcus Walden's closing the game in Toronto and blew it. Blew it. As good as he's been in the early part of the year, they're up a run. He blows it. Nonetheless, they go up ahead late. They go ahead in the 12th, I think it was, and you just heard it there. Hembry gives up a home run, blows it again, and they end up winning the game on Chavis's home run. So you tell me, real win or fake win? Fake. Fake win. Phony win. Silicone.
So it was Walden in the 10th. It was Walden, not Workman.
Okay, by that point, I think I was out.
Same thing. Galvis swung at such ass, you wouldn't even believe it. But anyway.
I mean, it is. It's stunning. Like, so look, they end up going 3-1 in the series. They blew them out today. But coming in to work today before they played this afternoon, I looked at that game and said, how do you feel good about that? The Blue Jays suck. This is a suck-ass team. They stink. And their lineup blows. They have, like, the second-worst lineup in the league. I think the only team that had scored fewer runs than them coming into this series was Detroit, who's, like, historically bad.
Okay, so the Red Sox just take 3 of 4. They're now, I'm just going to say, guess, a season-high 500, something like that?
Ish.
And you don't like them?
I'm just telling you that they still have not played consistently well. And so they're not playing great right now. They went through that one stretch where they were playing better. Then the Astros came in here and they lost 2 out of 3. And I don't think they played well in this series against the Blue Jays. So they ended up winning three games. The second win in the middle there was a struggle. They got their asses kicked in the second one. So, like, honestly, I feel like they're fortunate to come out of there having won three or four. Now, at the end of the day, three wins is three wins. But, again, I do put some premium in how are they playing. And they didn't play well in this series. So, and now we're in a tough stretch of the schedule coming up. And this was a great point that Alex Speer made in the Globe yesterday. Do you realize that up until now, they've had the second easiest schedule in baseball?
I don't believe in strength of schedule in baseball.
I do.
I think it's vastly overrated.
I do now, and I'll tell you why.
In baseball. In other sports, I think it's important. In baseball, it means nothing.
Okay, I'll tell you why I put stock in it now, because there are a lot of teams tanking. And last year, the Red Sox cleaned up on the bad teams. So I hear what you're saying, that you don't believe necessarily in that.
When you're going good, you're going good. When you're going bad, you're going bad. It doesn't really matter who you're playing. That's sort of my experience.
So you might be right.
But you might be right that we are in a new era in baseball where it's really gotten goofy with these teams tanking.
I mean, they've played a lot of bad teams here in the early part of the year, and they're just a couple of games over 500. Would you say five over now?
I just guessed.
Okay, so I think it's four. I might be wrong, but somewhere around there. Like, you're going to play all those bad teams, and you're not going to be that far up, over 500. So, like, I keep putting emphasis on the schedule that's coming up. You're going to play the tough teams, and the reality is they've already missed an opportunity here.
Quickly, how about Chavis, your guy? You coming around on him?
Nope. Even the comment he made last night. As a player, I like him. Of course, he's given them production. Every time he opens his mouth, I think he's a bigger dink than I thought the day before.
What did he say last night?
So last night was, I didn't even have a hit the whole game. I came up, and, I'm just trying to, the time up, I was trying to hit a home run, and I'm like, good God. Every time I hear this guy talk, he sounds like he is Ted Williams in the batter's box. Shut up. Just shut up. Like, because he talks like a guy who's been in the big leagues for 10 years. Dude, you've been here for 15 minutes. I can barely smell you. You've been here so short. Like, you just keep your mouth shut and keep playing. All I want to hear is out of that guy's mouth is, hey, look, I'm just trying to make the most of the opportunity. Okay, that's all. I want to prove to these guys that I belong. The way he talks, they hit him leadoff today. It doesn't feel like they're doing anything to me to squash his ego a little bit, because it feels like he's getting bigger every day.
Maybe it helps him. Maybe he's one of these guys. He's confident, cocky.
Okay, maybe. Yeah. Doesn't mean I have to like him. I think he comes off as unlikable. And I think somewhere along the line here, it's going to come out, and someone on the team is going to say to him, would you shut your pie hole already? Boy, you got all the answers. Oh, he bugs the crap out of me. I don't know what it is. Something about his whole tone, his vibe. He just strikes me as, Ben Attendee had a little of this. Murray made this analogy, and it's right. Because I'm not a huge Ben Attendee guy. I think Ben Attendee's wildly overrated. And honestly, people talk about the swing. The ball doesn't leave the ballpark enough for me to think he's that good a player. So I'm not a big Ben Attendee fan. This kid talks like he invented the game. Like, Doubleday Chavis over there playing first base today. Thanks, Doubleday. Appreciate the update. Awesome. Thank you. Nice of you to let me know. Tell me, how do you turn a double play? Can you explain that one to me, too? It doesn't feel like you have that one down. Oh, God. He rubs me the wrong way.
There's your Red Sox.
He can hit. He can hit. He rubs me the wrong way.
There's your Red Sox minute and five extra seconds right there. To your calls on everything. We have one more one more Bruins item to introduce, and we'll do that right after Murray's 90-second update, the latest from the Patriots today in this update. Then we're back with that.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.